Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest where in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought, gender, I hardly know her.
Boo.
I know, I'm sorry.
I thought it was cute.
I liked it.
I'm Fran. I'm a writer and editor, and I'm still waiting for Laura Dern to text me back.
Like, never gonna happen, girl.
Come on, please, Laura.
Because your best friend Phil met her in person.
Oh my god. Name check. Phil's to this day my enemy.
Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer. My sexuality is gender trouble, but my gender is the wretched of the earth.
Okay.
Oh my god. All right. We went dark. I am Dennis Norris II, and I'm a reader, a writer, a former figure skater. And I'm sorry to tell you that I still feel a lot of shame around pooping. It's true.
Oh, okay.
I do. Like many a bottom. We're still working through it.
We appreciate you. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's your girl Boya Loke. I'm an empath and an artist with a lot of feelings.
Aww. Oh,
I wouldn't know what that's like.
Thank you for coming into the studio today to sub in for Teebs. We have a Loke, a poet, a performance artist, reigning non-binary queen of Instagram. Yes, you can own it. Buy their book. You just re-released your chapbook, correct?
Yeah, it's online. Well,
amazing. Where can they buy it?
On my website, alokvmenon.com.
Amazing. Joe, yes. What do we have on the menu today?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited, you guys. This week, we finally find a swimsuit that fits. It was so hard. A Loke takes us on a little ride. We get hard... We get hard butch femme, and we end... by properly gendering him. Mm. Take it away.
I'm feeling a little peckish, so let's start the top of this show the way any good top should. A little tease, a little something to wet your palates and minds. It's our amuse bouche, and today we're going to amuse your bouches with a little game called Swipe Right, Swipe Left.
Don't know her.
It's a classic. So, Alok, we in this game, which you're already familiar with, but I'm just going to explain for the sake of our readers, we list a bunch of cultural forms, things, cultural phenomenons, things in pop culture, and we decide whether we swipe right or swipe left on them. And Joe, which one is left?
Left is the
not so much your form. Yeah. And then swipe right is okay, yes, got it.
Liking the sound effects.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
Okay, so swipe right, swipe left, the snow.
Oh, is looking at me
like, are you fucking
okay? The snow is white supremacy incarnate.
Yes.
Swipe left, absolutely.
Also swiping left.
100% agree. Yes. Swipe left.
You have some pretty passionate thoughts about weather, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. My career goal is to be a weather person, actually.
Wow. subscribe to the channel.
Gives the weather and also what you should be wearing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I feel like fashion and weather are an intersection that are really important to me.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, like, on my Instagram stories, I'm always saying, hey, everyone, it's your girl Boya Loke coming to you live and in color, always in color with today's weather forecast.
Yes.
And the thing about snow is it's like nature in me, like the aesthetics, like I want to take a photo in it, but I don't want to live in it.
Yeah.
No, and I feel like it needs to be a word in English that describes that relationship.
The relationship with I want to.
It's called green screen.
Oh, that's
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
I just like seeing snow on greeting cards and sometimes through a window, and that's fine. Yeah. More than enough.
Yeah, truly. Swipe right, swipe left, gender reveal cakes.
Oh.
So you're swiping right, Alo.
Yeah, yes. Look, universally.
You look absolutely pleased.
I mean, like, if it's done at like a queer performance art show. where there's like a meta commentary and there's vegan and gluten-free options and like the cake is actually green.
Right.
Or teal.
I was just going to say, sure. If you slice it and it's brown, which is the color of shit. Yeah. Everyone poops, Dennis.
I like, first of all, though, do you really need another reason to have cake? Like, cake is just wonderful. But I like the idea of them for, like, adults who are, like, reclaiming their identity or claiming it for the first time. I think that's really fun. Mm-hmm. But the idea of doing them for unborn babies who have not yet had a say, gross.
What would you, unnecessary. If you had, like, a gender reveal cake, like, in your later life and you came out as non-binary, what color would the cake be?
I think the entire thing would just be filled with rainbow sprinkle confetti. That's
interesting.
It may be decorated with, like sparkly pink, like, high heels or something, like, strappy high heels. Mm-hmm. And paid for by Manolo Blahnik.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I think my non-binary cake would just be hollow.
Just air.
Yeah. Also perfection.
Mm-hmm. Swipe right, swipe left, Glossier, the makeup brand.
Swipe right.
You swipe right?
Yeah.
I'm a big Glossier fan as well. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
I love the boy brow, but I don't like the gendering of the boy brow. Yeah.
It sounds, I love makeup, but Glossier, just by the sound of it, sounds like something I probably couldn't afford.
Which it's actually pretty affordable.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, then swipe right. Swipe right in that case.
I like bougie sounding makeup too. I'll swipe right.
And the font's really nice.
The font is really cute.
I love a good type font.
Absolutely. It's necessary.
Swipe right, swipe left, RuPaul's Drag Race. So I watch the show every week, full disclosure.
Fran and always watches it in public. Is it a paid appearance, Fran?
How dare you? Not sponsored. I watch it, actually, I used to watch it at a lot of bars, and now I watch it with friends and in enclosed spaces. Mm-hmm, I will swipe left on a lot of icky things that come with Drag Race. However, I am addicted.
I would like swipe up. It's another option. We like hover above.
Abstain from. Yeah.
If I don't watch it, does that negate swiping right? Like, I like that it exists, but I really just don't enjoy reality TV at all.
Wow.
So, like,
controversial
take
so early.
I know. And everyone for years has been like, you need to watch. And I've seen some clips and I love that it exists so much and that it's opened it up to a lot of people. So I guess I swipe right on that, but I just don't enjoy reality TV.
The reason they say that you need to watch is because you are a reality TV show in human form.
Correct.
Like, that is true.
Well, then why do I need another one?
Everything you say sounds like it's from Real Housewives. You've never seen it.
Turning around and introducing herself.
That is true. That's true.
You speak in catchphrases.
I do. They're fun.
Swipe right, swipe left. Swimsuits.
Swipe right. I love being in a Speedo. I wish I were in a Speedo right now. I hate my body, but love being in a Speedo.
Interesting.
Isn't that weird?
That is very bizarre.
I think it's really weird.
That is a juxtaposition.
Yeah. Swipe right.
Hello? Swipe right. I wore my first bikini, actually.
Yes!
So, like, I was trying to start the new year on, like, a new kind of thing. Uh-huh. And so I was on vacation and I was like, okay, can I take a photo of myself in a bikini? And I ended up looking at myself in the mirror and I was like, whoa, like, this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Was it something you had been at, like, kind of, you didn't want to be involved with at first?
Like, I don't know if we're getting into the trauma segment of the episode. Right?
This is food for thought. Everything
is trauma segment.
Welcome. Welcome.
Growing up, I never swam because I was made fun of my body hair so much. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I would always wear a shirt whenever I went into the swimming pool. Mm. And so something about just going in the extreme opposite direction and just being like, I'm here in a bikini felt like so freeing for me, so I loved it.
Absolutely.
I also have swimsuit trauma. I also wore my shirt in the swimming pool, believe it or not. I was that kid. Pool parties to this day are the most terrifying thing I could possibly undergo, and therefore I also hate most, if not all, men's swimsuits.
Wow.
Which is why I love, actually, this is not sponsored, the Tomboy X unisuit, which
the
is
one
like
piece.
Oh my god, I saw the photo of you in that. That's one of your most iconic photos.
Stop. I love that swimsuit so much. Finding a gender nonconforming swimsuit is the first time I've ever felt like I really wanted to be at a pool ever. Mm-hmm. And I felt very comfortable in it, even though I was the only person at all the parties wearing a gender nonconforming
swimsuit.
But that's fine.
We can go to a swim party together.
Let's do it. You'll be in your bikini and I'll be in my unisuit.
Amazing.
It's very cute. It has like a rainbow zipper as well. Swipe right, swipe left. gays who hate when you use the term faggot.
Oh, I swipe left on that. It's like my literary agent, who, bless her, is a straight white lady, but pretty good. She was like, you use the word faggot a lot in your book, and I Google searched, and it is 345 times, and maybe you should pull that back a little bit. And I was like, no.
345
times?
345 times
in one book?
You think you could have done 20 more to make 365?
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. A faggot per day.
Alok is like, that seems kind of low.
Agreed.
If a faggot per day is my philosophy around my sex life, why can't it be my philosophy around my literary career?
Totally.
Exactly.
No, I swipe left on that. I'm sorry. I don't like it when people police the language that I use that is related to my identity,
right,
even if it's part of their identity. And a lot of times it's not. Like, I don't really encounter that many queer people who who have a problem with me saying the word faggot. It's usually straight people. Mm. And then I'm just like, I understand where that's coming from, but not here. Take that somewhere else.
Cosign.
What's your relationship to the word faggot?
I identify one as one, like I relish in it.
Yeah. Swipe right, swipe left. Photo shoots.
These are really good.
This is targeted at Alok, because Alok's life exists in a photo shoot. You truly, like, you pull off so many photo shoots.
I really do.
You
actually,
like a lot.
Like all the time. Yeah, that's an absolute swipe right.
Okay, tell us why.
I feel like photo shoots and performances are the only place I can dress where I want to, like, how I want to dress.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something about, like, the simulation of it that allows a space for me to be free. And that's kind of like a paradox that I hold really close, is that performance is where I can access authenticity.
Mm, I love that. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Thanks for playing.
Amazing. Thank you.
For our second course, we have an Impure Thought segment, courtesy of our hoe of honor, Alok Bibrahan. So happy to have you here. If you're not familiar, an Impure Thought is wherein a guest thought tells a salacious, titillating hookup or sexy sex story, or maybe not all that sexy and not all that salacious, and it just is an encounter that happened and is of note or worthy of the narrative or whatever. very capacious definition, but Alok, do you care to take it away? Start us. Where are we?
Sure thing. So setting. Imagine like a tiny, tiny town in the Midwest.
Okay.
Hate it already.
Like population like 500.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Okay.
So I'm talking to this person online and it's like 11 p.m. and there's absolutely no public transport in said small town.
Okay.
There's no cars. There's no way to get around.
Okay.
So then it becomes like a sort of like, how are we going to facilitate this interaction?
Uh-huh.
So it turns out that there's one community van that actually goes to different sites in the small town to pick up people. So they say, okay, I'm going to get on the community van to come by to your hotel to pick you up.
What?
And then we're going to get off the community van over here. And so like just orchestrating these logistics in the small town. I'm like, wow.
That is a lot.
Right? So I'm picked up in the community van, just like making conversation with the van, like, hi, like, what's up? What's everyone doing? Like, everyone knows each other. It's a small kind of place.
Okay, cute.
You know?
So you are not native to this town?
No.
Okay.
And so then afterwards, it's like two or three in the morning. And I'm
where
like,
did you go?
How to their place.
Oh.
And I'm like, how do I get back to my hotel? Because there's no way to get back. And then this is like, there's a lot of scenes in my life that feel like a movie. I'm not sure if it's a horror film or a romantic comedy, like that kind of that kind of thing.
Okay, fair.
Where then this person takes out a tandem bike. And then I find myself biking in the cold rain with this person.
No.
Back to my hotel, like literally for 25 minutes on a tandem bike.
What?
With this person?
Yeah.
Because a tandem bike is the one that has two seats in a row,
two seats.
Right? Or next to each other.
No, like, shout out to all the bike people. I don't want to offend you, but like, I think that there's like the front seat and then there's the back seat and you're both pedaling.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd never ridden one of those in my life.
Oh,
and so it was like 3 a.m. in this like pitch dark rain.
My.
I don't do nature well, you know? So I'm like screaming, crying. Like, I just want to get home, but like, we're on this tandem bike, but Yeah.
When you were on the bike, were you fully screaming the whole time or only part of the time?
Well, you know, like it was like more of like an internal kind of like
blood curdling. Yeah.
But it was, but then it was also kind of like thrilling and exciting. Like I really like moments in my life where I'm like, I can play Avril Lavigne in the background and then it's just like, wow, like this happened. You know, this is happening, you know? So it just felt like, it felt like very circa like mid 1990s, like emo me, like in the rain, like on the tandem bike, like who are we? Like, what are we aspiring towards, you know? And there was like no lights because it's this tiny, tiny place.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, but we made it alive.
I'm proud of you.
That's terrifying.
Wait. Tandem bike. Okay, so this is the other thing is that tandem bikes are terrifying. Did it take like a while to like get on it? How long? Minutes? Like, hours?
A good like 16 minutes. Yeah.
No.
16.
It's because you have to coordinate the kind of like cycle.
Your weight also.
And then it's like when you're turning, the person's be like, I'm turning. Like you have to really like coordinate.
Wait, no,
do you both have the handlebars? So you both have to turn. Okay.
I'm just like pedaling.
Oh my God. This is horrifying.
My mind is blown. Wait, what were you wearing?
Oh my God. Great question. Thank God I was not wearing a dress or a skirt. I think I was wearing like pajama pants.
Great.
Yeah. Well, that's appropriate for 2 in the morning.
Can we talk about
the sex counter
and the whether hookup. And whether it was worth it?
Well, that's
I honestly feel like the bike ride was better. I feel like that experience sticks out to me more.
Wow.
It was more poignant.
Yeah. Wow. Well, at least there was some good writing that happened that night.
Okay.
I mean, you know.
Oh my God. I hate you with that pun hit me so late. And I hate you for it. Oh my God.
It had to happen.
Wow. It's but not the tandem biking.
That
was tantric.
Was it a tantric biking?
Tantric.
Oh my God.
Ooh,
no.
Tantric biking.
Was it raining when you started the bike or did that like...
It was raining when we started the bike.
Oh, I'm imagining you getting on the bike and you're halfway there and then it's just like... And then starts raining.
That's what I was picturing as well. Very cinematographic. Yeah. Have you guys ever had like really bad like having to get home from a hookup situations?
Ooh, that's an interesting. I feel like, I mean, have you? I feel like I definitely like a walk of shame is like a thing I'm very privy to. But I kind of, my walk of shame is usually like a walk of pride because I'm kind of like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like,
switching those hips even harder left to right.
Yeah. I mean, the drive home, I told the story earlier in the show of spilling the entire bottle of poppers in the back of my mom's Subaru when I was fingering that guy.
A mood.
And let me say that the drive home at 2 a.m. from hooking up in a state park parking lot in the back of my mother's Subaru was a whole mood and a half.
A Subaru that reeks of VHS tape cleaner.
Like, I was on poppers.
Was that a sponsored ad for Subaru? Is today's podcast sponsored by Subaru?
Actually, we're going to have to bleep out the word Subaru because they do not want to be associated with my slutty ass.
It's actually sponsored by Tandem Bikes of the Tandem family.
Thank you.
Tandem is like Kleenex. Like, it is actually a brand. And
I'm so ready. No, so a couple of years ago, I hooked up with a guy. This was also in the Midwest. And in the middle of our hookup, there was a rainstorm and then a massive blackout in entire city.
So romantic.
Which yielded some very hot, like, sex. But then afterward, he wanted me to stay over, and I was like, I have to go home. Like, if my family wakes up in the morning and I am not in the house, like, there will be, like, every police officer in Cleveland, Ohio is going to be searching for me. Like, I need to get home. Mm-hmm. So I was driving through a pitch dark city. There were no street lights.
Oh my God.
And that was actually pretty terrifying. But I made it home. I'm still here. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about you, Fran?
In terms of like a getting home scenario, oh gosh. I mean, I went on like a very, I'm thinking about this tandem bike thing. I went on how long was that? 545 mile bike ride.
Right.
Through across the West Coast for an HIV AIDS fundraiser. And I think I remember, I didn't. So you're usually like too tired to like even think about sex because you're like waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and like going to bed early and like your body is exhausted or whatever. But I do remember finishing the race and being like, wow, I would love to have sex right now or something like that. Because it was like a really long bike ride. But like,
And there wasn't chafing happening?
There was no chafing.
Oh, wow.
Well, I probably, wow, yeah. The person that
what
I was
seeing... What was your taint, like, maintenance regimen?
Well, you have to... This is a great question, Joe. I'm so glad you asked. The taint maintenance is this thing called butt butter. And you take... you put on a plastic glove. And you cover your plastic glove in the butt butter. And you stick your glove into your crotchal region. And you just, like, in and out, in and out, in and out. And, like, kind of make sure that every area of your crotch is covered in butt butter. And you can do that every single rest stop.
Wow. Wow.
And that ensures no chafing. And I mean,
Is this like customary practice?
This is, yeah, everyone. And it's so customary that at every single stop, they would hand out tiny little, they come in little packets, like tear packets, like ketchup. And you would like just take the ketchup pack and everyone would fully grease themselves in front of each other.
Wow.
Like sticking their hands down their pants. I know, like sticking your hands down your pants.
So what you're saying is long distance biking is a great introduction for bottoming.
Perhaps.
Oh, for those who've never done
it
before.
You know AIDS life cycle is 93.5% bottom.
You think? I don't know.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
I love sweeping gestural statements.
as a biker myself, who has never tandem biked in my life, I do think most bikers are bottoms.
Yeah, but the butt butter, I mean, it worked. And the person I was seeing at the time, I promised them, I was like, I will bring my butt home to you intact.
Wow.
I did.
What a romantic gesture.
I did. I said that on it.
Really selfless. Really selfless, yeah. Frank.
Like, I think you need a tweet Hallmark right now. There's a whole new series of cards.
Amazing.
Thank you for that delicious story.
Thank you.
HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so that you can just cook, eat, and enjoy.
Achieving your 2019 goals is as easy as enjoying delicious home-cooked meals with HelloFresh.
Fresh pre-measured ingredients and easy-to-follow recipe cards are delivered to your door each week in a special insulated box. There are 3 plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family, with the option to switch between for when your tastes change.
Get out of that recipe rut and start cooking outside of your comfort zone by discovering new, delicious recipes.
Y'all, those pork tacos, I like have incorporated some of the tricks from that recipe into my everyday cooking. They were so good.
So good. Amazing.
Take advantage of HelloFresh's special offer for 2019. Get $80 off your first month by going to HelloFresh.com/THOT80 and enter THOT80. That's $80 off your first month. Just go to HelloFresh.com/THOT80 and enter THOT80.
It's time we get into the meat of our discussion, the thought process, if you will, spelled T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
And the theme of today's episode is gender.
Gender!
So, Dennis, you want to open it up for us?
Yes, I do.
Of course you do.
All right, my dearly beloved thoughts, we are gathered round table to consider that beautiful, mutable, ever-evolving spectrum that we like to call gender. Now, without making too many assumptions, I'm guessing that, like me, most of y'all were raised to think that gender and sex were synonymous and that there were only 2 variations, male and female. I can only speak for myself when I think wistfully back to the early years when I pranced around the living room thinking I was Michelle Kwan and dreaming about her Vera Wang dresses. But it's not hard to imagine a 12-year-old Joe O, the science ho, wishing he could try on sports bras instead of jerseys.
Oh, I whipped him off after the soccer goal scoring.
You were also a clogs girl.
I did wear my mom's clogs.
I love clogs.
When I fit
love
in,
clogs.
In them, yeah.
Clog queen.
I always felt like clogs were... like, should be considered a very masculine shoe.
What?
But that's a different conversation.
I know somewhat. Well, why gender the shoe, Dan?
Why gender the shoe?
Second
but as
of
a
all,
kid, I remember thinking.
I know someone who has a clog blog. It's called Clog Life.
Put it in the show notes. Put it in the show notes.
Well, I have a Woody for that. Anyway.
I hate you.
I can also see a 15-year-old Fran plotting world domination with sharpened nails painted in the blood of homophobes. And a 16-year-old Alok writing poems and knowing she would soon delight the internet with body hair, and a simultaneous smorgasbord of brightly hued lipsticks.
Yes.
That's a lot of lipsticks.
Between the four of us, we are a mishmash of identities and expressions, and we proudly take part in a global movement to disrupt binaries and make space for everyone at the table. But we live among those who would reinforce how confused we are, how deviant. To start us off, I want to go back to the word confused. Circle of thoughts, I have to know. What is an early memory of confusion at the way someone near you presented their gendered self as opposed to how you thought or were told they should present?
Someone that isn't you.
Someone that isn't you. Someone that you reserve. Someone that you observed. What did you think or what were you told?
I have one. Okay. I mean, I find it so interesting because I grew up in the country where women were butch and that was straight. It's like women, you know.
Straight women were butch.
Straight women were butch. It was like, you know, no one wore makeup. Everyone was like, you know, shoveling shit everywhere. Like people worked with their hands all the time. So that wasn't gender variant to me. Sort of the sharing manual labor as a part of like building a farm, building a house. Like that all was very normal. And it was only as I left that space that I realized that that is not fucking normal a lot of places. And that that sort of the butch femininity of getting shit done is queer in a way.
I feel like that's super queer. Is that so? Was that like college or like some younger time when you took?
As I started being around rich people, I was like, oh, not everyone's mom knows how to like, you know, put their fist up the butt of a cow to do shit. You know, like this is a weird like
I come
from a weird place, and that was a big part of my understanding. But I came to an understanding of race, class, and gender kind of all at the same time, understanding that like I came from a place that was different, like it was poor white people, and that had an effect on gender, and like the people's race politics back home were really bad, but like at the same time I didn't identify with any of the white people who were at my college because they were all rich. So it was like this really weird time of like coming to all these realizations and understanding how all these systems of power had all been affecting me that I couldn't see at that time because I was just in it and young.
This message comes from iHeartRadio sponsor, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should really think about getting a quote from Mercury, because Californians save an average of $677 with Mercury. It's quick and easy, and in just a few minutes, you might find you could save a lot of money on your auto and home insurance. Plus, Mercury was named one of America's best insurance companies by Insure.com 4 years in a row. Low rates, big discounts, great insurance. Go to MercuryInsurance.com today to get a quote.
It's crazy how much we have to pay for outdated, impersonal healthcare, and even crazier that we all just accept it. It's time to face facts. Healthcare is backwards. Luckily, there's Forward, a new approach to primary care that's surprisingly personal and refreshingly straightforward. Forward never makes you feel like just another patient. Backed by top-rated doctors and the latest tech, Forward gives you access to personalized care whenever you need it. Using in-depth genetic analysis and real-time blood work, Forward's top-rated doctors provide you with in-depth insights to better understand your genetics, mental, and physical health. They then create custom, easy-to-understand plans to help guide you to achieving long-term health. With Forward, you get unlimited in-person visits with your doctor and access to care anytime via the Forward app, all for one flat monthly fee. It's time to stop accepting backwards healthcare and start moving your health forward. Visit GoForward.com today to learn more. That's GoForward.com.
20 years ago, you fell in love with the Gilmore Girls for 154 episodes and 4 movies. On the I Am All In podcast, Scott Patterson, a.k.a. Luke Danes, everyone's favorite grouchy diner owner, takes us down memory lane. Tune in to the I Am All In podcast to relive the Gilmore Girls saga one episode at a time.
We'll share stories. We'll share the memories. I've got a million stories to tell, especially about Sean Gunn and Milo Ventimiglia and a lot of other people, too.
Scott will take you back to Stars Hollow, Luke's Diner, Dosey's Market, Miss Patty's, even Mrs. Kim's Antique Shop.
I know you guys have been binge-watching it through COVID and, you know, for 21 years and generations of families and mothers and daughters, and let's watch it together.
If you can smell snow, if Paris isn't just a city in France, and Friday night dinner is a requirement, you won't want to miss this. Listen to the I Am All In podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Gabrielle Collins, period drama nerd, and your behind-the-scenes guide to Bridgerton. On Bridgerton, the official podcast,
we're learning how this fantasy world dipped in history came to life.
Daphne, her costume design really is about the elegance of simplicity. It's just color and shape.
We went old school and we got two scenic artists in who painted the backings for us by hand.
These dukes are all like in their late 20s, early 30s. Almost all of them are unmarried, really good looking, and none of them have syphilis.
Can you imagine when he looks into your eyes and then he dips you?
We just heard this sort of ripping sound. Yep, I think there's just been a wardrobe malfunction.
Listen to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your favorite shows.
I have, like, very cognizant, so I don't have any for, like, other people, but I have very cognizant memories of, like, people telling me, of, like, a classmate telling me how to cross my legs. I think that's kind of a cliche, but, like, whether I should cross my legs, like, quote-unquote, like a girl, or quote-unquote, like a guy in the triangle shape, which is, like, a less comfortable way to sit.
Yeah,
like,
who
I just
does
don't
that?
Understand. Well, I think like, men are like, well, I can't cross my legs.
My balls will get in the way.
Because my penis is so big.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it? It's the same thing. Also, like, I just think that, like, boxers are, like, a prison. Like, I think that toxic masculinity, like, cultures a lot of, like, young men and boys to believe that they have to wear boxer shorts in order to, like, stay men. And like, they can't, like, even though, like, tidy whities are, like, ergonomically correct and, like, much more comfortable to wear. And, like, I don't know. I just remember, like, needing to graduate to boxers to, like, affirm my gender.
Oh, same. Yeah. I did the exact same thing.
Yeah,
same.
It was it's a prison. Boxers are not.
Do you remember how old you were when you were thinking about that?
With boxers specifically, I was a late. So I graduated boxers late. So maybe like 16 or 17.
Oh, okay. I was middle school as soon as I started being in the locker room in front of men, and then the men made fun of my tidy whities.
Mm.
And then I was like, Mom, I want a boxer short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Alok?
I'm thinking about my mom. I grew up in like a really tight-knit Indian community, and most of the moms weren't working, and my mom was a professor. And I remember, like, everyone would think it was, like, a strange arrangement that my dad was doing most of the caretaking for us. Mm-hmm. And my mom would always, she was, like, and is, like, a really big feminist presence in my life. And so she would always sort of, like, teach me about gender. And I still say now that I think that gave me permission to be gender nonconforming, because I saw my mom sort of transgress this stereotype that she was not interested in.
I feel like we're, like, talking about some, like, very explicit ways that, like, gender can be really toxic and horrible, but I feel like they're also, like, very, like, tiny ways and seemingly harmless ways, or ways that people in your everyday, like, gender things without realizing it. Like, are there any examples that come to mind?
I think just clothes.
Clothes in general.
Yeah, it's like it's really intense, because I feel like I started to identify as gender nonconforming because I wanted to, like, get out of all that bullshit. But then there's so many of a new set of politics of, like, oh, if I don't paint my nails or if I don't wear a dress, then I'm thrown back into manhood. And so I have to, like, always think about, like, what I'm wearing. And it's difficult because I feel like my creativity is constantly pushed back to communicate what I want.
Mm-hmm. How do you shop? Or rather, because you're a shopaholic, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, you are.
Yes,
you
girl.
Let yourself guilty just right now. Just
a guilty face.
How do you, like, navigate gendered clothing stores or gendered spaces like that?
That was guilt, but that was also trauma. So I stopped going to stores because it was too much.
Mm.
Like, I was dealing with so much shit in stores. And shopping used to be, like, so fun for me to try on stuff. But then just, like, literally getting kicked out, like, having people make fun of me, people taking photos of me, like, the sort of benevolent comments of, like, are you sure that you want to be in here or that you belong here? So now the only way I'll go to stores is if I'm going with other people, because when I go alone, just stuff happens. But I think that that inspired me to start making my own clothes. So that's why now.
It's a great way to remedy that.
Now yes, I make the majority of my own clothes.
Do you really?
Oh my gosh.
That's bazonkers. I hate you. Wow. You're not allowed to be this talented. It's not fair. I had told everyone on the mic before that I started going to Barry's Boot Camp, which is, like, a really, it's a really stupid, like, antithetical thing for me to do with the kind of personality that I have. But anyways, during the exercises, every single, and I've gone to a lot, every single instructor does this thing where they're like, okay, ladies pick up a 15-pound weight.
Yes.
And gentlemen pick up like a 25-pound weight.
The gender of gym spaces. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, locker rooms, I am never more afraid than when I am in a locker room. Mm-hmm. And it's an odd space because at the same time, I have been known to hook up in locker rooms, right? So at the same time, it's like this space of queer pleasure, queer possibility, queer meeting. And at the other time, it's like if I do the wrong look or the wrong whatever, I will literally be like physically very, very harmed. Mm-hmm. So it's like this, that crazy thing. And then just the toxic masculinity in workout spaces, mm-hmm. the way people feel like they need to use their bodies to own power and then to exert that power on you through gender. It's just as like, I've noticed when I go to the gym, because I have, you know, I'm busy in the morning. I love femme gym clothes, but sometimes I just like, my ex bought me this like matching pair of like, you know, blue, very butch kind of like shorts and like a matching like tank top, but like that workout material, the stuff that you would see like a straight bro wearing. When I wear that to the gym, everyone in the gym gives me like the fist bumps and they like give me the head nods. Mm-hmm. When I'm wearing like my normal shit, no one even looks at me. Mm-hmm. None of the men look at me.
Wow.
You know, so it's sort of like, it's fascinating to be someone who, like, I consider myself non-binary and I know I present as a cis gay man, but like, and kind of owning those different identities and watching how different people interact with me, like the different level of comfort people have touching me physically when I present more butch is fascinating.
Yeah. I think, like, that's a big part of why I actually don't, like, have a gym membership and I don't actively go to the gym is because I cannot, like, it's very hard for me to be in all male spaces when I know that a lot of the men are going to be straight. And honestly, even when I know that a lot of the men are going to be gay, if it's, like, a more gay gym. So, like, which is part of why, like, I prefer to do things like going to Pilates studios or yoga studios where because I also prefer to wear, like, women's workout clothes. I'm much more motivated to work out if I am comfortable in what I'm wearing, and that's, like, really important to me. Yeah. And but it's funny because even there they'll have like a locker room that's gendered, and like I will use it if I need to use it, but I just like go in, I go out, I'm very quick, I don't look at anyone. It's like it's like a terrifying space for me, and so I don't like to engage.
Joe is starting to build on something like about this, but why are people so allergic to or at times violent toward things outside of the gender binary? I'm looking directly at Alec because they have a body of work around this topic.
I'm trying to figure it out. Like every day it's a new experience. And I wanted to say about the gym stuff, I recently started my own gym journey. And the only way I could do it was by doing a full face of makeup to go to the gym.
Really?
Yeah. Like I felt like I was so getting gendered as man every time I was in the gym that I like needed something to disarticulate that. And so now there's like sweat kind of like foundation kind of like lipstick moment. Which
do you
has
look
been...
like a painting?
Yeah,
a beautiful painting.
It's really fun, and there's very few rare moments in New York where I actually feel like recognized, but actually someone who worked at my gym said to me, you can use whichever locker room you want.
Oh my god,
this is amazing. Around the violence of the gender binary stuff, I mean, I think at a fundamental level there's this mistaken idea that non-binary or gender non-conforming people are a minority, but I always say that we're not a minority, we've been minoritized. And the difference between being a minority and being minoritized is a world in which if you present as visibly gender non-conforming, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when you'll be policed back into one of the two. And so I actually see that a lot of the policing of people like me is because people see themselves in us and that they've already done that work intimately and they're externalizing it to us. So they had to bash the kind of queer or the gender nonconforming in them, and then we are actually it's not actually about us, it's their projection.
I really like that idea of it, especially when you're in that moment. That can be really a terrifying one if you're being policed in a public space by someone that you don't know, that you're like, okay, this is not about me, this is about them. Like, that to me is a mental trick I've never thought about before. That, like,
I
work.
Mean, I think that that fine line between desire and violence mm-hmm. is something we don't talk about
enough.
Oh my
God, seriously.
And it came up in the play that producer Alex and I saw, Choir Boy, which is incredible. Terrell Ivan McCraney, definitely see it. But that line of people being so repulsed by their own desire, I don't even mean... like they want to have sex with you. That's not what I mean by desire, but like desire to exist in that way, or desire to like the desire that they had to potentially break those boundaries in themselves. And so because you present that desire toward them, they both are attracted to it and then afraid of that attraction, and that's a rupture. And people don't know how to deal with ruptures oftentimes, and it comes out as violence towards the person they feel. And then how you gain control. Again, you gain control by physically harming someone or by saying some shit to them to make them feel less good about themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it's definitely something, particularly around binary. I think about queer attraction as well. How many people like have queer sex with someone and then they weren't expecting to do that, and then the person like rejects them afterwards because, you know, they were an expression of a desire that they had repressed for mm-hmm. so long. Yeah.
When I'm getting harassed, I can't tell if people want to be with me, or beat me.
Yeah.
And
or yeah,
all of it at the same time. But I think that goes to sort of what we were talking about reciprocity and emotional labor. Like, I think that I used to do the work of being like, I know you used to wear dresses when you were 5. Like, let's work through this together. And then one of my friends like had this really amazing conversation with me where they were like, Alok, that's true. Like, a lot of these men have repressed their femininity, but guess what? You didn't. And you didn't ever stop wearing dresses, and you never made that choice to actually be invisible, that you've been experiencing violence from when you were a kid until now, and they're not showing up for you. And so I think that's part of like, I sympathize and I get it, but I also feel like it's unreciprocated because those of us who are actually living visibly gender nonconforming lives today are constantly erased.
Is it erased or hyper-visibilized in moments that are going to lead to violence, right? That's the paradox of it.
What would you, so I told you this before we got on record, but like I texted a few friends and told them that Alok was coming into the studio, and I was like, do you have questions for them? And like a lot of questions that came through, I had like two different questions that were along the same thing, which were like how, from someone specifically who has a job wherein they don't feel comfortable owning non-binary pronouns. So they use a binary pronoun in their job, but they themselves identify as non-binary and are figuring out how to like work through that and own that. What would you say to someone who is just like trying but don't have the safety space to do so?
I would say do whatever you need to do. Like, I really am so over standardizing visibility as authenticity. Mm. Like, actually, we're all navigating so much violence, so much trauma, so much family dynamics, so much labor dynamics.
Yeah.
And I actually, that's why I feel like so much of the coming out discourse for me is where racism and transphobia live, because they tell us to come out and they don't protect us once we are.
Word.
And so I'm just kind of like, actually withhold. And if you are able to, and I think I feel really sad because I wish that there are ways that I could withhold that I can't anymore. Mm-hmm. I think I came to a place where when I first started identifying as GNC, I was like, okay, I'm just in male drag most of the time. It's fine. It's safer. But then I started to feel so dysphoric about that I started to wear dresses and skirts every day. Mm-hmm. And it didn't just become something that I did occasionally. It's something I did every day. And I kind of miss being able to do that because my life was so much easier.
When you would present in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My good friend and friend of the show, Darnell Moore, wrote an essay about coming out as queer that reframes coming out as inviting in, that like sort of tries to break the closet and say this kind of Harvey Milk white notion that we have to be publicly queer, otherwise we're cowards, is not, it's white supremacist fundamentally, and doesn't understand that people have to negotiate all sorts of different identities. And so reframing that about inviting people into your wholeness when you trust them. And that to me, when I read it many, many years ago, y'all Google Darnell Moore inviting in, it completely shifted that conversation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I work in I'm a scientist in an academic institution, and you know, my nails are painted right now. And I would love to wear a chunky heel to work, but I don't. So those, I hate having to think so hard about it. Mm-hmm. I hate the guilt of doing it and of not, the fear of doing it because I could get, I mean, I could get fired, and then the guilt of not doing it. Like, there is no answer that makes you feel good about yourself fundamentally every day.
Yeah.
Dennis. It's,
I mean, and at the end of the day, especially once we're into adulthood, like, we have to protect so many different aspects of ourselves, including our financial well-being, which in some ways is our, is like our access to capital, and that way can be our access to power in our society. And that's also, that can be an important thing too. So it's really challenging. When I was in my last job, and this is a small part of why I left it, I was at a nonprofit. I worked with kids, a pretty, I mean, all like families of color, but a pretty diverse like group of families in a lot of different ways. And I, by that point, was very out already as a queer person and had been. And while during my time there is when I began to really express more and more my non-binary identity, although it wasn't until my last year that I did change my pronouns, like on the website and for my professional bio and all of that. I never really talked to families about it, so I was usually referred to as he anyway, which is acceptable to me, but I did change it like visually on the website. But I say that to say that after I left, I recently met up for drinks with my first boss there, and she told me that when I started, like for the first couple of months, there were a number of families that actually came in and complained because seeing someone who was visibly queer was, they felt, was a problem for them and for working with their kids. And she was kind of like, well, like, he's here and he's the only person that you know who's going to get your kid into the school you want your kid to go to, so like, sit down and shut up. But and once actually that started happening, like, she was like, after that, we didn't hear any more complaints from anyone. But I didn't even know that I had to kind of earn my like safety and my position in that space because of that. But I think that it can be really, really tough when you are a queer person and you're working around children, because a lot of people are like, whatever, 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 when they see you out in the world on the street. But then when you're working with their kid and you're introducing something to their kid that they have to answer difficult questions about or that they don't want their kid to know about, then sometimes that's when it becomes like more of an issue for them. So that's something that I've always like thought about, because a lot of my professional life has been working with like minors.
What about you, Fran? How do you negotiate it
with,
like, in terms of your gender and sexuality presentation? I mean, you know, you're professionally gay.
I'm professionally gay. I am a professional homosexual. I recently was on a podcast, and the person asked me how I identify, and I was like, well, I don't know. Like, it's, for me, like, the process of working through my gender is still, it's an ongoing project. Yeah. My gender is an ongoing project. And for me, like, I'm someone who has kind of always deferred to he, him pronouns, but like the idea of calling myself a man is just not something that I I feel connected to, and I don't really know how to reconcile that exactly. And honestly, one of the big things that I was thinking about going into today's conversation is actually one that I've had with a lot of either cis-presenting and or closeted non-binary people who have like who are weary of coming out or weary of owning the label of non-binary because we don't want to take up space or because we don't want to assert ourselves in a way that would, like, you know, I don't know, honestly, or even like to feel like non-binary identity is like inaccessible or that it's too cerebral or that for some reason I'm not smart enough to own what it is that means or these people, you know. So I'm curious, I don't know, how did you reconcile that, Dennis, or Alok, what would you say to a person who's dealing with that?
I get this question all the time.
Really?
I would say probably one of the most common questions that I get.
No way.
And I really want to first sympathize with that, because for a long time I was like going through the same thing. But then I started to actually think, okay, this is actually transphobic to conflate non-binary with having to experience violence. Like, what? our entire conception of non-binary has to be mediated by violence. And if you have not experienced this kind of violence, then you can't be something. Like, I actually want a world where non-binary people are fine, like relaxing, sitting at a park, like, and I think like a great example to think about that is like, actually, like, there are a lot of like rich white cis women who are not experiencing the brunt of sexism, but people aren't going to be like, you're not a woman because you've not been insert violence,
right.
That's where the transphobia lives, is that we create this idea that you have to experience a spectacularized violence in order to have access to this category when I'm like, mm-hmm. no. I think that the more important question is to actually have a conversation about proximity to power. Mm-hmm. And that's not the same thing as how you identify.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually find that most non-binary people are able to talk about power, to be like, hey, like yeah. I'm non-black, or I'm middle class, or I have these sorts of things. And that shapes your experience of non-binariness, but that doesn't disqualify it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I deeply, deeply agree with that. And I think one of the things that you're touching on there is the idea that in so many different facets of our identities, like, it's really actually a conversation less about how we identify and more about proximity to power mm-hmm. and power in itself. And there are so many people out there who I think have maybe a distaste or fear about talking about power. Mm-hmm. And I think that when it comes to that conversation about taking up space, because like what's difficult for me about that is that like we're all allowed to have identities and we're all allowed to name our identities and we should be naming our identities. And there's room for our identities. What is more important and what's more interesting is like maybe where does our identity, or in some cases where does our presentation, place us in that conversation about power, and how do we use that to continue to lift up the people who are around us and who maybe have a lesser proximity to power. Like how can we use our position to do that? That's like what's really interesting to me anyway, and that's also a productive way to potentially like engage in the conversation and have some space.
Oh, look, that's something that you actually do a lot with Europe. Will you talk about like how you tour and what you do?
Yeah, totally. And one thing I wanted to say to that conversation before is I think haunting that conversation is a fear of like, if I'm not on hormones or if I'm not medicalized, then I can't claim this term.
Even if you don't say it, right. That's what this
how
is.
American 2019 and, is that? Right. Like, if you're not taking a pill, you're not a thing.
And that, like, I really want to speak out again. Because like that is so racist. Like it's so racist because there have always been gender non-conforming people in communities of color, indigenous mm-hmm. communities across the world before and after the medicalization of transness. Mm-hmm. And this idea that like medical transness is somehow more real or authentic is really rooted in white supremacy. And it needs to be named. Yeah, it needs to be named as such. And I think it's like that's the number one reason so many people tell me like, well, you know, I'm not medicalized, so I don't want to. And I'm like, where did this narrative come from? Like, this is actually so ahistorical and wrong.
Right.
And I think that's where also we need to also have really honest conversations that gender binarism exists within the trans community. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something I've really been trying to speak more about is like, when I walk down the street, I have trash thrown at me. I have people physically assault me, sexually assault me. I'm pushed down. I'm shoved. I'm worried for my life. But there's no ability to talk about that because I'm not a man or a woman. Mm-hmm. And so actually a lot of the violence I experience is more likened to what society would call trans women of color. Mm-hmm. But there's no framework for me because people just see me as a man in a dress. Mm-hmm. But that's why I'm getting attacked, right? And so I get really frustrated because I'm like, oh my gosh, if I said I was a woman, would people believe me about the violence that I experience? But that's an insidious way in which gender binarism shows up, is that we make the binary a proximity to intelligibility or coherence.
Right,
otherwise there's just no frame of reference for what you're going through. The question around touring, and I think about this all the time, is like, actually, I think that the best artists are the people we've not heard from yet because they've been forcibly silenced. I just operate from that premise that actually the most creative people in the world practice art that's about their survival, because what is more creative than living? Like, I believe and operate from the premise that life making is the creative work, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of MFAs can't make art. A lot of like
dragging y'all.
A lot of professionals.
Oh, you don't have
no,
MFAs.
Like, some hashtag not all MFAs, but like, so many of the people who I see as artists would never call themselves as artists, and I didn't for a really long time too, because I was just like, this is just what I. It's not like my craft. It's like, and I'm like, whoa, like you survive. That is a creative act. Yeah, show me how. You know? And so a lot of what I really try to do when I'm touring is I try to work with people who would never be recognized by the institutional art world as making art, maybe because they're doing drag, which is still constantly always seen as a kind of less than or club art form.
Absolutely.
Or maybe because they're actually calling it like a diary entry versus poetry, but they're making that kind of work. And I'm always thinking about, who do I get to open for me where I can actually say, look at this person, aren't they incredible?
I love that.
Oh my god.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you
for joining us for this conversation. We do not deserve you.
That is very true.
I'm feeling like I'm full, but I could fit just one more thing inside me. Dennis knows what I'm talking about. And today, our dessert, which is the little delectable thing that we recommend at the end of each episode, is co-presented by me and Alok. This week's dessert is him from the Powerpuff Girls.
That's brilliant!
Oh, Mr. Quackers, you are so smart.
Quite a positively evil scheme you've hatched, and I'll finally be rid of those girls forever!
Hello, ooh, can you tell me why him, this supervillain of the series Powerpuff Girls, is like meant something to you?
I mean, him was the only visual representation I had of gender nonconformity growing up at all.
Oh my God.
Because everyone calls him without asking what their preferred pronouns are.
Truly.
And like him
getting misgendered constantly.
And I feel like guilty even calling them him because I'm like, I don't really know. But I think it goes to the point where it's like they were wearing heels. They have kind of like facial hair, but they're demonized. Maybe they're just misunderstood.
Maybe they're just misunderstood.
Maybe the language for it doesn't exist yet.
Or didn't exist. I mean, I love that it is that they are the most powerful villain like in the series. They're like the be all end all villain of all villains. Like they're the villain they're constantly trying to be and can't. They're the ones that they're trying to thwart and never can. The one that like keeps coming back, always has like a recurring moment. And I love that like this kind of non-binary, maybe trans feminine person is like truly constantly the most powerful object in the series. Like I love that. But I also love that they have thigh-high boots, facial hair, and a fully red disposition, and a tutu, and that their voice, like, vacillates between, like high-pitched, but also, like, deeply masculine, or whatever. I think that that's...
that's me when I teach, yeah.
Is that how you teach?
Oh, my God.
Your,
it's just like, it's down here. Yeah,
mask drag.
Yeah, oh, my God.
You do
I'm
have
ready
a very
it.
Throaty disposition.
Hello,
and,
it's all your voice does go everywhere.
Yeah, but... Power to him, truly. Like, I also, similar to you, Alok, like, I remember this example of, like, gender nonconformity, like, as a child, not being able to necessarily unlock or understand it. As a kid, I didn't quite get why it was happening on screen, but I intuitively knew that I had something akin to whatever this character was.
Amazing.
Like, there's also, like, have any of y'all ever seen All Dogs Go to Heaven?
Yes, of course.
Kenya just freaked out. There is this, like, Deus Ex Machina moment in the series where this drag queen crocodile saves the dog and...
Yes, I remember that, yeah.
And their owner... and it's bizarre, and it's like this,
oh my goodness,
and it's literally a Deus Ex Machina, like they sweep in and save everything, and with no rhyme or reason, a character that has never been introduced and has no place in the narrative just like comes out of nowhere. It's like, I'm a drag queen crocodile, and like, wow. And they sing a song, and then they and they save them and disappear, and you're like, what? And that's another moment, like similar to like what him was for me. I was like, wait, this is insane, and this representation of their gender is something that I truly have never seen before in my entire life, and it definitely was never explained in either of these series. Definitely didn't come with the language or the lexicon of like what it means to be non-binary, gender non-conforming, but I still knew what it was.
And you saw some of yourself in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were like, there we go.
So shocked, Fran, that you were identifying at a young age with a supervillain.
But maybe someone who, like many an animated villain, is actually just misunderstood.
Absolutely.
What a little bite.
Yeah. This episode of Food for Thought was made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and also our new home at Forever Dog. Our producer is the J-Lo to our Ben Affleck, Alexander De Palma.
No, we do not say Ben Affleck on this podcast. That is homophobic.
I'm just trolling you. I just wanted to troll you.
Amazing.
Our social media manager puts the penis in happiness, Christina Tucker.
We do not say penis on this podcast.
Honestly, both fair points. Subscribe, rate, and review us, or I quit. I swear to God, I'm out. This is over.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Get at us on iTunes. I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on all social media, and also co-star. I want to figure out our astrological compatibility.
Oh, wow.
So match with me there.
I'm Joseph Osmondson. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com.
I am Dennis Norris II, and you can find me on Twitter at TheEarlDenDen, TheEarlDenDen.
Hey everyone, I'm Alok, as in Tell Me a Joke, Alok, and you can find me at ALOKVMENON.
Find us on Instagram at GaySLetsWhoRead, and join us on Facebook and Twitter at FoodForThoughtPod, where each week we pin some questions to the top of our page to continue the discussion of this week's episode. Sign up for our newsletter to see a list of everything we are reading and some extra delectable content at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, email us with your questions, thoughts, concerns, and
dick pics
at thoughts@foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.